From Buck's studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Rob Ferret, sitting in for Tom Clark, and I'm here with family doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share down-to-earth advice, and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. And if you have a question, the number to call is 1-800-462-7413. Along with your calls, we have some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Right. Opioids and parenting, the present opioid epidemic we have. How does that affect parenting now and in the future? Some really important investigational studies. And then we're going to talk about the election and the stresses that it causes and the effect that it's been having on people on both the right, the left, and the middle.
And we'll mellow out with a recipe, Zorba.
Tofu hot pot.
That sounds good. Okay, to the phones we go now at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Our first caller joins us in Helena, Montana. Hi.
Hi. I'm a vegetarian. I do have dairy occasionally, but that is it. And I was wondering what options I have when you suggest everybody go on to the Mediterranean diet.
Right, right. Well, Mediterranean diet is quite interesting because when we look at it, it's not a vegetarian diet at all.
Right, a little chicken,
it's a
little
diet,
fish in there.
It has a little chicken. It has fish once or twice a week. But for the most part, the protein that we get is from nuts, from legumes. It tends to be a more vegetarian protein from a point of view. So, but let's talk about dairy. When you say you have some dairy, what does that mean?
Mainly cheese.
Mm-hmm. Every day, every other day, once a week, once a month. How often do you have that?
Well, lately I've been having it, every other day. And before that, I was practically completely off of it, but I just started getting a little bit more back on it.
Okay. Why'd you get back on it?
Well, I do like it.
Hey, we live in Wisconsin.
Like,
you've got to love cheese.
Sure.
I mean, that's it. But we have to look at the vegetarian diet, or rather the Mediterranean diet, as really being the king of diets. Fish twice a week, modest amounts of dairy, not a lot of dairy. Like you said, some cheese, and it's not as if you necessarily have cheese every day. Vegetarian diets are good. I don't think they're as good as the Med diet. I think the Med diet is the best. So some of the things you have to look at is, what are you not going to get when you have a diet that's a little bit more robust? And so one issue is calcium. You want to Google calcium. We'll put it on our website, zorbapastor.org. And you want to pick out vegetables that have calcium intake. You want to get 1,000 milligrams of calcium a day. Some of it can be inorganic sources like one tum, which is 500 milligrams a day. Do not take a calcium tablet greater than 500 milligrams.
I just want to jump in. A tum would be a singular form of what we would buy as tums.
Tums, that's right. Yeah, that's right. That is true. But those are the things kind of to look at is what you're eating. The other thing is, quite often people say when they make their diet a bit more robust, they say they feel better. You know, sometimes I think we become too strict, too Puritan. Now, I'm for moderation in all things, including some of our dietary restrictions, because we've got so many fruits and vegetables and other products that we can eat in our society that really make us feel good and give us pleasure.
Well, let me ask, you're eating mostly vegetarian, a little bit of cheese here and there, a little bit of calcium. You're feeling pretty good? Your health pretty good?
Yeah, it is. And the reason why I was trying to get off of cheese, because that was really the hardest for me, is I have arthritis, and it's supposed to be inflammatory. And I don't notice whether it helps when I get off of cheese, because I don't think I get off of cheese entirely.
I do not think that cheese causes inflammatory arthritis or inflammation. I think that basically is a communist plot made to make our children get rid of cheese, and I'm not the first person to say that. That was Gordon Roselip back in Wisconsin years ago, who said margarine was a communist plot, and I think it's a communist plot to say that's the case. No, cheese does not cause inflammatory arthritis. I don't think that at all. I think you can have cheese with impunity. If you like it, if you can digest it. And besides, think about all the artisan cheese that's around these days.
A lot of good cheese.
I mean, when I was a kid, it was Munster American cheese, and I shudder to think my mother would make toasted cheese sandwiches with, are you ready, Velveeta.
It has its place. Yeah. Well, let me ask, what is your cheese of choice?
I like cheddars.
Like a good sharp cheddar?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, cheddar cheese. Cheddar cheese is wonderful, especially aged cheddar. We can get it in Wisconsin. 5-year-old and 10-year-old cheddar, and it just melts in your mouth.
Definitely.
And it just
is that. I would really be a cheese addict if I lived in Wisconsin.
Well, come to our state and enjoy our cheese.
Eat your cheese in moderation with impunity. And good luck.
Right, right. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call.
Thanks for calling. If you have a question for Zorba, call in at 1-800-462-7413.
You know, it's interesting. You go to the web, you get lots of good information, mm-hmm. and you get a lot of junk information.
Wait. And hold on. I want to stop you. Yeah, you're saying there's bad information on the
shocking.
Internet, Zorba?
Absolutely shocking that we actually have bad information on the web. This is a perfect example that cheese causes arthritis. There is no scientific evidence of that at all. Now, old age causes arthritis. We've got good evidence. We don't even need science for that. But cheese, bah, humbug, does not cause arthritis.
Well, maybe if you've got a dull knife and you're cutting that cheese and cutting it, it's going to inflame your arthritis. Just holding that knife real
tight.
You know,
you got to bend over backwards to be able to make it causing arthritis. Yeah. I got it.
It's indirect. You can join in with your questions for Zorba at 1-800-462-7413. Before we go to our caller, Zorba, a topic. This is a serious one. There's this yet another reason that we should worry about this opioid epidemic that's going
on.
The
opioid epidemic is I wouldn't say pretty serious. I would call it very serious.
Very serious.
It's a big issue. It's a big issue in our society. We're in the midst of this epidemic. We're trying to attach it and approach it, rather, and figure out what we can do. And this is an article that looked at parenting and opioids. And they took roughly about 50 men and women before and after treatment for opioid dependence. So in other words, these were parents who had children who had opioid dependence.
The parents do.
Yes. And they looked at it. They scanned the brains of them before treatment and after treatment. And they showed them pictures of kids. Okay. And some pictures of kids actually develop a more, if you will, emotive response. So a child with larger eyes, a child that is smiling will often give you a very warm feeling in your heart. Just picture how you picture wonderful, wonderful children. If you look at advertisements, for instance, in our society, they often show happy, smiling kids. And they showed them parents before and after treatment. And then they compared them. They did scans. They compared the scans, the MRI scans, to see basically where the blood was going, what the reaction was in the brain, to parents who did not have any opioid addiction. They looked at it before and after. And basically, the long and short of the study was it showed that opioid addiction blunted the normal response in the brain to visual displays of children, either children who were happy, children who were distressed, children who were in need. They did not have the normal response in the brain that we normally have. I mean, you see a child who's crying and screaming, you pick it up. You see a child that is smiling, you normally feel warm. There's something that goes on in your brain. People who were on opioids did not have that normal response.
So the part of our brain, the chemicals that fire to say, hey, take care of a kid now, during the addiction, they're not firing.
During the addiction, before the treatment, even after the treatment, it was blunted. There are three systems in our brain.
After the treatment, it looks better.
Well, it looks better, but it's not completely better. It doesn't fit normal and probably doesn't fit normal for a while. I call it the DOS system, not digital operating system, which is the old system for a computer, but it's dopamine, oxytocin, and serotonin. And these basically are hormones within the brain that give us our emotional response. Opioids blunt that response. After you take somebody with opioid addiction and you actually take care of them, it takes a while before they return to normal. I mean, they're not normal automatically when they're off of it. It takes a while, if you will, for the brain to normally fire up. And I think that's an important part with this study. Mm-hmm. It shows that if you are a parent, if you have an opioid or a hydrocodone, oxycodone problem, and you've cured it, it's going to take a while before you're back into your normal brain functioning. And parenting is pretty instinctual. This is kind of a serious study.
So this is yet another fire lit under us to try to deal with, prevent these opioid addictions before they get started in the first place.
Right.
And treat the ones that are already there.
If you know someone, if you know a parent, let's assume you know a parent, you know somebody who's had an opioid addiction, and they've actually gone through, they've gone through and they're off. They're off drugs now. It's going to take them a while before they get to that normal state. And so I think this is a point where we need the social, sort of the backbench, the social support that you mm-hmm. need for parents who have had opioid addiction. They may not react normally to their child. It may take a while for them to react normally to their child. But if they stay off their opioids, the human brain is, humans are amazingly resilient. They will often return. They will probably return to that normal parental instinct, but it's not instantaneous.
All right, a positive hope there if we can tackle this problem.
For sure.
We'll go back to your calls. Do you have a question for Zorba? Call in at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. We go now to Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
All right, how are you today?
Good. I wanted to talk to Zorba about dental hygiene. A couple of weeks ago, he was talking about flossing, and I, of course, don't floss. Which
of course.
Is why I'm calling. But there are alternatives, it seems to me. You can get good plastic toothpicks from CVS and pharmacy that have a sharp edge at one end and a little brush at the other. You can get perio brushes. You've got water picks. You've got electric toothbrushes. And you've got mouthwashes. So the question is really, what does flossing do that those other alternative and preferred treatments do for me?
Well, wait, the question for you is, you don't floss, do you do one of those other things, the water pick or the toothpick?
Well, I use these plastic toothpicks that have a regular pick at one end and a small two-dimensional brush at the other. And that gets rid of any food between my teeth. And I do that pretty religiously after every meal because I can feel it. And in the evening, I use an electric toothbrush and also a perio brush and then mouthwash.
So you do all of it. So I've got to ask, though, with the toothpick, do you walk around with it kind of dangling out of your mouth with mirrored sunglasses and a baseball cap? Look kind of like a tough guy?
Well, no, that would make me an American. No, I am retired. I'm retired, so I can just potter around the house and do it.
Excellent, excellent. So Zorba, he does
everything.
So you're
retired. You're doing a lot.
He's doing everything but flossing.
Right,
you're
retired, so you can spend all this time attending to your teeth with alternative things. It's interesting. So how old are you, and how are your teeth? Tell me about your teeth.
Well, I am 72. Mm-hmm. My teeth seem to be in pretty good shape. I did have a couple of implants a few years ago, and they seem to have held up pretty well. About a year or two ago, I had a couple of crowns that had to be redone because they were about 40 or 50 years old. Mm-hmm. They were gold. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think they're in pretty good shape, but, no pain or anything like that.
Got you. Well, let's talk a little bit about this. There's some interesting things. So the U.S. Public Service Task Force, they are the conservative group of people that make recommendations, doctors, nurses, they're on a panel, very important panel. And this year, they didn't talk against flossing. They just dropped the recommendation for flossing. So as you can imagine, the dentists were up in arms and say, what do you mean you dropped flossing? And they said, well, the data's not there. And the dentist then came back and said, well, you didn't look out long enough. You didn't look out 5, 10, 15, and 20 years, which, by the way, is true. They didn't look out long enough to see whether or not it really does make a difference or doesn't make a difference. Now, if you look back to World War I, let's go way back to World War I. One of the major reasons that young men could not become cannon fodder in World War I was they had bad teeth. And it was after World War I, it saved them from being killed, by the way. A number of them probably died of influenza.
They couldn't eat the tough rations?
Well, they had teeth. There were teeth out of their mouth. It was just one of the issues in the Army is you have to have, to be able to go into the Army, you have to have good teeth.
Okay.
Because you have to be able to have good nutrition. That's the issue. So, enter brushing, which made a huge difference. Then we enter fluoride, which made a huge difference in children. In some ways, you may be too old to get all the benefits from fluoride. Fluoride was around about that time, but then fluoride became part of the water supply right around the time probably when, if you were a child in the U.S. That made the major difference in there. So where does flossing fit? Well, I think flossing has a place. The dentists believe you've got to floss once a day or twice a day. The periodontists, which, by the way, see the worst teeth around, they say, oh, no, no, flossing is the only thing that works. But the fact is, you're doing a lot to your teeth. You're getting rid of the stuff in between your teeth. You may not be getting rid of all the little bacteria with flossing. You're doing a good job. I think there is an alternative to flossing. Now, I know I'm going to get email from the dentist and say, no, 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 it's got to be flossing. But I think you're doing a lot of stuff. And it's probably just as good.
Yeah, but let me ask you this. You are in there with toothpicks. You're in there with a water pick. You're sandblasting. You're doing everything. Why not just floss? Wouldn't that be easier than all this other stuff?
Well, flossing just seems a little messy to me, you know?
I think you're doing a great job with your teeth. Keep it up the way that you're doing. You're not flossing, but you know something? You're doing a lot of good stuff. I would keep up what you're doing. And make sure, of course, you get regular checkups and get your teeth cleaned. If you've had implants and your gums are healthy, you've had implants, you've had cavities, you've had crowns, make sure you see your dentist twice a year. I do believe in that. I do believe that twice a year cleaning by the dentist makes a big difference, by the hygienist. So good luck. Keep up the good work and keep working on your teeth.
Okay, thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks for that call at 800-462-7413. Before we take a break, Zorba, you may be surprised. This may shock you, but our listeners don't always agree with your radio wisdom, if you can imagine. So we'll fire up another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc.
The following email came to us from a listener named Kathleen from Eden, New York. She writes, Dr. Zorba, the cat who bit the recent caller on your show did not attack this woman out of the blue. Do you remember? There was that cat bite, though. The woman had like some serious problems.
I do remember.
So Kathleen goes on, it was sitting on her lap being petted and was obviously overstimulated. The caller hinted that she probably missed the signs of this happening. Any cat owner knows this happens and needs to keep it in mind. Your outdated suggestion that cats like this should be put to sleep made me gasp. You need to educate yourself regarding cat behavior and other options for dealing with problem animals, in quotes there, other than putting them to sleep, quotes again. Visit your local no-kill shelter. Get online and check your local adoption agencies. I'm in a state of disbelief that you would suggest euthanasia for any animal because it does not act to our expectations. So, Zorba, she strongly disagrees with that, and I'm assuming other people probably did too.
And this particular case was where she was attacked, and she went to the hospital, if you remember. She had lots of problems with that. It was a cat that she was petting normally, and, you know, I think that she brings up a reasonable point. I don't think this cat should actually, and that was the issue that I had, should actually go to another person, because once again, you may go to a shelter, get a cat, and all of a sudden the cat attacks you. So I'm a dog owner. I do love cats. I don't have cats because I'm allergic. And I'll sit with what I said for this individual person because she was attacked quite well. However, I think knowing your cat, knowing your animal is important, but also knowing the limits of domestication. And frankly, some cats and some dogs can't be domesticated. And then the question is, what do you do with them? And I am for the fact that humans first, animals second. I know some people will disagree with that, but I have to come down on humans because I am a doctor, not a veterinarian.
Well, and how about a lesson I think probably everybody could agree on? When you get that pet, learn the things up front. Get the dog training going right off the bat.
Right.
Know the limits of a cat.
Right. But how much can you train a cat?
Cats, well, but know the warning signs that you're petting too long, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. So, know the warning signs and then pay attention to the warning signs and see if that'll make a difference. But here's a good question. What do you do when you've done all the warning signs and the animal still attacks you? That's the issue that I think is the hard issue for people to face. And it does happen with dogs and with cats. Mm-hmm. But you know what? It doesn't happen with fish.
Well, I don't know. If you have pet piranhas... And you keep putting your hand in the tank
goldfish.
And just
How about
falling
goldfish?
Asleep.
Goldfish, they never attack you, right? Goldfish.
Never turn your back on them. Do you take issue with something Zorba said? Just post on our Facebook page or email us at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our recipe is coming up along with more of your calls and another interesting topic to discuss right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Rob Ferret here, sitting in for Tom Clark with Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our number again is 1-800-462-7413 if you have a question for the good doc. But before we get back to the phones, it is recipe time again, Zorba. And this week we've got a treat. We have a special guest joining in on the fun. Leanne Brown is an avid home cook, and her latest cookbook is called Good and Cheap. Eat well on $4 a day. She joined us today to share with us her delicious homemade recipe for a tofu hot pot. Leanne, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's wonderful to be here.
Well, before we get to the recipe, Leanne and Zorba, I want to talk about this cookbook, Eating Well on $4 a Day. What did you set out to do with this book?
So the $4 a day didn't sort of drop from the sky. That's the amount that a person who's living on food stamps sort of has as an average per day. So it's really sort of meant to be within that sort of limit of really a very small budget and to show that, you know, there's still so much really wonderful food that you can have, even if you have so little to work with. It's really a matter of getting in the kitchen and cooking things mostly, you know, from scratch. And that doesn't mean it has to be difficult, but sort of things like the tofu hot pot that we're going to be talking about today, you know, really beautiful aromatic broth, and you throw in, you know, some sort of basic common ingredients and bring them to life.
And your goal here, as I understand it, was to make recipes that were, like you said, not too difficult, that were cheap, obviously, but that were also tasty and healthy, which putting
Absolutely.
All that together, it
so
sounds
important.
Like a tall order.
Yeah. So it was actually my thesis project for my master's degree in food studies at NYU. So I worked on it on and off. I did research and sort of worked on it for about a year. And then after I graduated, I put it out online. And it ended up going viral on this website called Reddit, which is huge, has millions of users, actually, and people got excited about it there. And that led then to a Kickstarter project to fund an actual print run, because up until then, it was just a PDF that I was giving away for free online. And that's still something I do on my website. If you go to my website, leannebrown.com, you can get the PDF for free. But people wanted physical copies as well, and we wanted to be able to do a giveaway for every single copy that we sold through the Kickstarter. We wanted to give one away to someone who couldn't afford it, because the idea was really to get this in the hands of people who couldn't always afford a cookbook. And so that it sort of sprung from there. That did really, really well. And then I ended up getting a publisher and put out a second edition, which came out last year, and now that's available in stores everywhere. And for every copy that we sell in the store, we also donate one, and we've worked with some, like, I think almost 800 different nonprofits across the country Ooh. To accomplish that goal. It's been amazing.
Right, these end up in food banks and places like that, right?
Absolutely, in food banks for sure, and that was sort of what I initially thought we'd mostly be working with places like that, but we ended up working with, you know, farmers markets, healthcare organizations, often schools, daycare centers, sometimes, you know, all kinds of support centers. Is really pretty extraordinary, sort of the wide use and interest that we were hearing from people who are saying, you know what, this is something that the clients that we support could really use. It's been amazing.
We'll put a link to that free download and information about the cookbook. That'll be on the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page. Well, let's get cooking, Zorba. We've got the recipe here for tofu hot pot.
So we start up with 1 tablespoonful of ginger root, and I freeze my ginger root because it makes it easier to grate, and basically then I always have ginger root around.
Good idea.
4 cloves of garlic, freshly grated, 8 cups of water, 1/2 pound of mushrooms chopped, which are really good, 1 teaspoon of chili paste. I always keep some chili paste in my fridge, 2 tablespoonfuls of soy sauce, either the low-sodium or regular soy sauce will do, 2 tablespoonfuls of toasted sesame oil, always good for taste, 4 scallions, chopped scallions, 16 ounces of firm tofu. And the tofu that I always have in the house, I either get fresh tofu or I have tofu that are in the packages that you can get on the shelf. They're inexpensive. You can keep it in your pantry all the time. They don't need to be refrigerated, and they're wonderful. They're I don't know how they make them, but basically they stay on the pantry.
Like
in
vacuum
the shelf.
Packed or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, they're vacuum packed and they're sterilized in some fashion or pasteurized. 4 medium carrots that are chopped. 8 ounces of dried spaghetti, soba, or any Asian noodle, and some bean sprouts. So can you put this together for us?
You bet. So you're really going to start by making this lovely aromatic broth. You'll want to put the ginger and the garlic on medium heat, and really, you know, just sort of get it just starting to smell really nice. You don't want any brown on there. And then just, you know, a couple seconds later, really, you are pouring those 8 cups of water on top, and then you bring that to a boil, and that's kind of going to be the base of your broth. Then you'll add the mushrooms, chili paste, and soy sauce for that really deep, sort of rich umami flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And then, again, you will let that boil for about 20 minutes, and it'll just infuse all that flavor. And that's when you're going to start adding all your delicious soup ingredients. So take the tofu. I like to slice it sort of into 4 squares because it just looks so rich that way, but you can cut it however you like. Throw that in there. It'll soak in all that flavor. Then add the carrots, the scallions, any, you know, anything else you feel like adding. You can really throw in sort of the kitchen sink, whatever's in your fridge there.
Which, by the way, is a great idea.
Yeah, I make
fridge
soup.
Because perishables perish.
Yeah.
And we often have them in the refrigerator and, you know, in the bin that we want to actually, you know, do something with them. We don't want to throw them away.
You don't want to get to the end of the week and sort of have the sad, soggy stuff at the bottom of the crisper that you can't use anymore. It's a tragedy. So that's really the base of your soup, all those vegetables. And you want to add the noodles just at the end so they can boil and soften, but before they get mushy. So basically just put those in, wait for them to soften. That'll depend on the type of noodles you're using. So just kind of watch carefully. Check the package directions for that. Then taste the broth, of course, so important, and add anything you would like at that point. So if you want it a little spicier, you know, a little bit saltier, add some soy sauce, some sesame oil for aroma, add all those things. And then you're done. That's pretty much it.
It sounds wonderful.
I love it.
It sounds wonderful. And I like, there are a couple of things that I really like about this. Like I said, first of all, it's a high protein recipe. Really good. Second of all, like you said, you can throw in other things, veggies that are in there too.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a full feeling, a umami feeling, so that things that really taste good. It's got all of those notes, if you will, to make it taste good. And it's cheap. It's inexpensive. And I think bringing up such an important point, you can eat well with less money if you actually are creative. And I just love this concept that you brought forth. And you must feel really, really satisfied about this because this was your thesis, and all of a sudden, boom, it's become a thesis that it just has a life of its own. You must be so excited and proud of what you've done.
It was way beyond my expectations. It completely blows me away. I still get so delighted and touched. I get messages every day from people who say what this has meant to them. And I could not be more fulfilled, really.
How wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing this with us. And once again, we're going to put this PDF on the website and also the name of the book for people who actually want to be able to buy it at their local bookstore or online.
That's Good and Cheap. Eat Well on $4 a Day. Leanne, thank you so much for sharing this with us today.
Thanks so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thanks.
Well, to get a copy of today's recipe for tofu hot pot, visit our website at
ZorbaPastor.org. Or, of course, you can find us through Facebook.
And you can find that PDF of the book, Good and Cheap, linked on the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page. Back to our callers now. We'll go to Naples, Texas. Hi.
Hello.
Hi. How can we help you today?
My question is, how long do harvested fruits and vegetables keep their nutritional value? If I go out in the yard and I pick a tomato and eat it immediately, it's very fresh. If I go to the store and I buy vegetables, you know, buy fresh fruits, do they keep their nutritional value?
This really is a good point. So first of all, once you start to pick a fruit or a vegetable, basically that is at the height of its nutritional value. It never gets more than that. In other words, it never develops better nutritional value. It may develop a better taste, so you may want to eat it. So for instance, if you pick a tomato when it's green or slightly red, put it up on the shelf, you know, have the sun go on it, or put it in a bag with some apples, for example, and an ethylene oxide is then emitted by the fruit that will help ripen in the tomato, and you may then eat the tomato, and that improves its value. But once they're basically on there, they begin to depreciate. Now, Frozen vegetables, when you freeze them, you actually hold their nutritional value. And in many cases, in the wintertime, for instance, frozen vegetables, a frozen bean, for instance, will have more nutritional value than a, quote, fresh bean that's actually been sitting on the shelf in your grocery store for maybe 3 to 5 days or a week or two, because you don't know when the stuff is actually picked when it's a non-local, when it's a non-local vegetable. So the answer is, it begins to lose it. Mm-hmm. When does it begin to get bad? Kind of when it tastes bad. You know, when it tastes bad, basically, at that point, when it looks bad and it tastes bad, it's probably at the point where it's beginning to, where it's lost a lot of its nutritional value. But that doesn't mean you can't eat it and throw it into a pot with soup.
Sure.
And enjoy the, you know, and enjoy basically the fiber and the other aspect of the nutritional value.
But I agree with you. Tomatoes, I don't know about the nutritional content, but that fresh tomato out of the garden is so much better than that winter tomato that probably has been bred to, you know, stand up to being bounced around in a truck more than flavor or nutrition. It is a big letdown, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Now, the thing, you know, if I go to the store and I buy fresh kale or carrots or peaches, how long have they been around? You know, and I bring them home and they're in my house for a few days.
What you just said was you have kale, you have carrots, and you have peaches. So we know, for instance, that carrots and last a long time.
Right.
You know, you can have carrots in your refrigerator. They last a long time. So they're going to have the most nutritional value for the longest period of time as a root vegetable. When you look at kale and then you look at peaches, probably peaches are going to begin to lose their value sooner than kale because kale will stay longer. But they may actually work, you know, at the end of a week, the kale is going to wilt and the peaches are not going to taste as well. But the carrots are still going to be there. And so each fruit actually has a different timing in when it's going to go bad and when it's not going to taste good and be as good for you. I think that's where it is. So I don't have a tried and true answer for you, but I do recommend one thing. Perishables are great, but they perish.
Well, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
You Thanks. Too. Well, that's the thing. Fresh vegetables may be best, but any of those canned, frozen, not quite so fresh is better than zero vegetables.
Absolutely, absolutely. For
and
sure.
I'm glad to hear you say that about carrots, because that's, you know, so much of my winter vegetable is carrots. And come up with new ways to make them and try to make them fresh and interesting for the kids.
Exactly. And carrots last a long time, and they have beta carotene. There's not just one beta carotene. There are 16 to 20 different kinds of beta carotene in carrots. They are a wonderful veggie. Get your kids interested and eat them all the time. And, you know, I mean, Bugs Bunny, think about it. He's been around for at least 50 years, and that's all
he's
eats.
He's still going strong.
Yeah, still going strong.
You can share your questions.
I have a question. Bugs Bunny. Oh, that's right. He did talk, didn't he?
Yeah, he talked.
I can't say. There's no way I can do it.
You're going to do a Bugs Bunny impersonation?
No,
I'm not going to do it. I've been mocked.
I'm not going there. I've been mocked
for my Christopher Walken impersonation already on this show. Well, you can share your questions for Zorba, your favorite carrot recipes, or your Bugs Bunny impression at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Before the break, Zorba, let's check in with your favorite hair splitters, the Grammar Police. Today, we are lucky enough, Zorba, to get a Grammar Police double shot. First, this email comes to us from a listener named Dick. Dick writes, "Greetings, Zorba. Great show. During a recent broadcast, you described the too frequent taking of blood pressure as being erotic. Not around my place. Have a nice day, and thanks for the fun." What were you shooting for?
There are things that are going off in the brain. I clearly was trying to say the word erratic.
Erratic.
The end,
I said
erotic.
I didn't know where that came
erratic.
From.
Well, I don't know. Taking your blood pressure. I don't think it'll give you a rise.
I don't think I want to explore this one too deeply. And if this has resonance for you, don't email us. All right, here's this next correction from Lucille, who just couldn't let this food flub go. Oh, this is a hard one for me too. "Dear Zorba, because I think you and your show are priceless, I need to help you pronounce bruschetta properly." And I think I just pronounced it wrong. "As an Italian-American," Lucille writes, "I would hate to see you appear to be uninformed about this. It's pronounced bruschetta." She gave us the right pronunciation.
Oh, bruschetta.
Bruschetta.
Bruschetta. But you've got to do it bruschetta.
The CH is pronounced as a K. And she says, ciao.
Bruschetta.
That's one I...
Bruschetta. You're not alone there, Zorba. I'm just trying to practice.
Bruschetta. I want to eat some bruschetta.
Ciao.
All right, ciao. Thank you, Lucille. You can join the ever-growing ranks of the Grammar Police by posting your thoughts, your corrections, right or wrong, to Facebook, or send them in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
More calls to come, another interesting topic to talk about, and Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba, all coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Rob Ferret here, sitting in for Tom Clark with Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Zorba, before we go back to our callers, a topic, the impact of the elections on our stress levels,
right,
some new research.
Right. Very interesting research came out of the American Psychological Association. And this is part of long-term studies called Stress in America. It's been going on basically for decades, looking at how people experience stress, you know, in their situations that happen. You know, as you can imagine, after the World Trade Center was bombed, there was lots of stress. But 52% of Americans now, whether they're on the far right, far left, medium right, medium left, in the middle, centrist, Republican, Democrat, independent, 52% of all Americans of all stripes say right now they are experiencing stress during this election period.
Because of the election, more than half of us say we are somewhat or very stressed by the political process.
More than you would normally expect. Now, winter is normally a time when there's an increased stress. But this is really important because there was a recent study called the Intra-Heart Study that looked, among other things, at anger and emotional upset as triggers for heart attacks. And lo and behold, they found that if you are stressed, something happens, you wake up in the morning and all of a sudden your candidate is suffering, not doing what you want your candidate to do. That 1 hour period after you experience that stress, it's more likely for you to actually have a heart attack. So the management of stress is key importance for your health because stress produces heart attacks of all sorts.
This is not just a nuisance then. So the American Psychological Association is saying what? We should take some steps to alleviate
stress? Well, this particular study was looking at a survey. So there's stress within the environment. The real issue is we're often stressed over things that we cannot control. That's the most often cause of stress. And you can imagine the election is not necessarily something you can control, whether or not your person is going to win or not. Yes, you can be involved in it, but you're not going to control the entire outcome. It's much bigger than you. And so I think you've got to, if you're stressed by things like that, you have to say, what am I going to do? So for some people, it's counseling. For some people, it's frankly antidepressants. What you don't want to do is hit the bottle and start to drink.
And one recommendation I've seen is, if this is stressing you out, take some media timeouts. Take a media break. The
Good
world
idea.
Will still be here if you take a day off of following the election and every twist and turn.
You could actually take a time off where you shut off your smartphone, don't turn on the radio, don't turn on the TV.
Well, keep
that'll
the radio
make a difference.
On.
Yeah, keep the radio on if it's public radio. But I think this really once again shows that if we're in a stressful time, which we are in America right now, half the population, more than half, says that it is, that it's also time to take action to make sure the stress does not key off a heart attack for you. Regular physical activity, 8 hours of sleep at night, eating a Mediterranean diet the right way. All of these things can help reduce your stress and help you live a long, sweet life.
We'll go back to our callers now. If you have a question for Zorba, call in now at 1-800-462-7413. We'll go to Hillsboro, Wisconsin now. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling. What can we do to help you out?
Well, I'm really interested about fish oil. I've heard many different sides of it. One person tells me it lowered her blood pressure, and so she was not able to take it. Another one says you have to be real careful because different brands are not really good. I've been taking it for some time now, like 2 years or so, and my husband's been taking it a lot, but I've seen my cholesterol going down, so I'm hoping that what I'm taking is is what's helping. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's, I've got a lot of opinions about fish oil. And by the way, I get hate mail because of my opinions about Uh-oh. Fish oil. There are people who are passionate about fish oil. So, number one. The data on fish oil shows that although it improves triglycerides, there's no doubt about it, can improve cholesterol, that 10 years out and 15 years out, it does not reduce heart attacks and strokes. Doesn't do it. The editorial that came out in the Annals of Internal Medicine about a year or 2 years ago was talking about the folly of fish oil, the fact that, yes, it does make a difference, but is this a cosmetic difference? Now, we know, for instance, that eating fish twice a week reduces the risk of heart attack and stroke. What's the difference between fish and fish oil? Bite into a capsule of fish oil, bite into a good piece of salmon, and you can tell the difference. There's more in fish than just the fish oil itself. So that's number one. Number two, if you're going to swallow fish oil and you go, I don't really care what Zorba says, I want to keep my cholesterol down, I believe in it, I think it's a good idea to take, then you may want to go to consumerlab.com or consumerlab.org. I believe both of the websites end up working. Pay your $25 to get into the website. They test fish oils, and they tell you which fish oils are good, which fish oils are bad. And actually, the difference in price is dramatic. So if you get a Costco or a Sam's fish oil, last time I looked, their fish oils were fine, they can cost one quarter of the price or one tenth the price of an Amway fish oil. So if you're going to choose your fish oil and you decide you're going to do it, I think you ought to choose one that doesn't cost a lot of money and then spend the extra money on fish. Far more important.
And I want to ask before I let you go, you're in Wisconsin and we're talking about eating fish. So when you eat fish, are we talking fish fry?
I try to bake it.
Okay.
Or like you say, salmon.
Good.
I make a salmon loaf or something.
Yeah, salmon is great.
Oh, that sounds great.
Salmon is my favorite. I could use some salmon loaf right now.
I'd eat some.
Yeah.
Stop by with some salmon loaf.
Thank you very much.
For a couple hours. All right, thank you. Good luck
to you. All right, bye-bye.
That fish fry, I mean, I like a fish fry.
I like a fish fry, too. Fry every so often. Friday. I don't do it every Friday.
It's a sometimes food. A sometimes food, like they say on Sesame Street. You can join the show with your questions for Zorba at 800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, we're going to dive back into the murky waters of medical quackery. Time again for Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Quacking Up.
Okay, Zorba, for today's Quacking Up, tell us about Dr. Linda Hazard and her fasting cure.
Yes, credible fasting cure. I mean, fasting, I'm not against fasting. I think fasting is okay. But back in the 1860s, Linda Burfield, a wonderful person, thought fasting was really good and took the fasting to the extreme. She thought you have to get rid of all the toxins in the body because the toxins are causing ailments. So she would have people fast, she would put them away, and she would give them enemas once or twice a day to get rid of the toxins that were in your colon. Until she was causing starvation and a number of deaths.
Wow.
And so, because she was not a doctor, although she called herself a doctor, when she was tried, not convicted, because they said, you can't be convicted because you're not a doctor. You are indeed just a quack that somebody followed. She moved from the Midwest all the way to Washington State, and then she had the fasting cure in 1908, published a major book, and then developed a spa that people came to for enemas and fasting. And eventually that spa was called Starvation Heights because people who went there were starving themselves in an attempt to make themselves feel better. And so I think there's a bottom line to this particular fasting. The bottom line is, you know, folks, don't take it to the extreme. If you're going to fast once a week or once a month, that's okay. But fasting every day, Fasting in moderation is the way to go. Do not fast to the extreme, or you might also end up taking a trip to Starvation Heights.
That doesn't sound like any fun at all. You pay somebody, you go there, you pay them to not feed you.
You pay them to starve you and give you enemas. And that's the extreme that people go for some of the... But on the other hand, I have to tell you something. She was a great motivational speaker.
I guess.
She could probably make her money today in motivational speaking on the internet with a PDF book on fasting to starvation.
I don't think I would buy that book. Well, if you have an example of medical quackery to contribute to the segment, send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org or post it on Facebook.
We'll go back to our callers now at 800-462-7413. We'll welcome a caller in Saginaw, Michigan. Hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I drive truck for a living, and what I'm curious about is my stress level gets up out here. I don't like taking medicines. So is there any kind of natural fruit or vegetable that would help release stress?
Well, let's talk about that tension. What are there particular things, just running behind schedule, or are there particular incidents that stress you out in particular?
Well, the scheduling is a little bit tight,
mm-hmm.
but it's also a lot of family stress out here because my family's at home and I'm out here making a living.
Right, right,
yeah.
Right. And we have a lot of truckers, by the way, who listen to our show. There are mm-hmm. a lot of truckers that we have that. And trucking is a very stressful occupation. Like you say, you've got the actual truck, the rig, the schedule. You've got weather that you have to go through. You've got other drivers that you have to deal with. All of the things, accident prevention. And then you're not at home. I don't think there's any particular fruit or vegetable, but how do you eat when you're on the road? I think that's always a challenge for truckers. What do you do? Do you bring food with you? You go out to eat?
I bring food with me and I cook in the truck.
What sort of food do you bring with you?
Well, I usually have a roast or chicken or some mm-hmm. chops. I freeze them and then put them in the cooler.
Mm-hmm.
I'll cook every week, 3 or 4 times a week in the truck.
In the truck. So you cook in the truck. How do you sleep? What do you do for sleep? You sleep in the truck, I take it. Are you over the road in the truck or are you at home at night?
I'm over the road, yes. Mm-hmm.
So what do you do for sleep? How many hours of sleep do you end up getting in the truck? And do you sleep well in the truck?
I sleep better in the truck than I do at home. And I sleep between 6 and 9 hours a night.
Okay, so you're sleeping well. That's the second thing that I think is really important, being able to sleep. How much coffee do you drink? How much caffeine?
I drink about maybe a 24-ounce cup of coffee a day and then maybe a 20-ounce Pepsi.
Okay. So one of the things that you have to be careful of with that is looking at caffeine. Sometimes a certain amount of caffeine is good. Too much caffeine can actually cause anxiety and stress. So you may want to cut down a little bit on that caffeine, not cut it out completely, but cutting it down can make a difference. Rob is looking at me when you look at the caffeine.
It doesn't sound like that much caffeine to me. Yeah, I don't drink anymore.
Well, it all depends. Once again, sometimes we're caffeine sensitive. You talk to your family when you're on the road on the truck? You talk to them all the time?
I usually talk to them every night.
Uh-huh. When do you get at home? How many days a week?
I go home every 2 weeks for about 2.5 days.
For about 2.5 days. So that, you know, those are stressful things. I don't have any magic potion. I have no magic potion with something of this. It's something that can be very difficult to handle.
Well, I have a question. When we talk to people who drive truck, the issue of the sedentary, you know, you're sitting in the truck a lot. Do you find time to exercise while you're on the road?
Well, I do a lot of walking.
Good.
And a lot of leg stretching.
Mm-hmm. Good. Good. Those are all good things. You know, I think you're doing quite a bit. I don't, as I said, I have no magic potion. I think you're doing a good job. The issue is because you're away from your family. Like you said, you're on the road making a living. You only get home that every 2 weeks. I think the issue then is trying to do some regular discussions with your family of how do we take care of your stress. Do you ever put your stress in front of your family to help them rise to the occasion because you're the one who's away from your family? What sort of family support do you have for your stress?
I'm not really certain I know how to answer that.
That is the tough part.
Well, let me take a couple stabs at things here too. Do you have a buddy you can like when you're at home, or somebody you can call the road, somebody not in your family who you could just kind of vent about stuff to? Do you have that social connection? Who do you talk to about this?
Well, I talked to Ruby and I talked to Kristen.
Mm-hmm. Ruby and Kristen.
They're my best friends.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Your best friends, yeah. That really helps. That's your back bench.
All right, that's
your
social
connection.
We
all need a good friend that we can call. I always say we all need a good friend that we can call at 4 o'clock in the morning and say we're suffering, but we don't want to wake them up too early, so we won't call them up until 6 o'clock in the morning. And that's your back bench. That helps a lot, I bet, when you talk to them.
Yes, it does.
And then, so people, I don't know much about this, isn't something I experienced. People talk about mindfulness and meditation and things like that to help them deal with stress. Zorba, do you think something like that might be?
Absolutely. The mindfulness might be very, very useful for you. And you know what? We'll put one book. Jon Kabat-Zinn wrote a number of books on mindfulness that are very good. He also does his books on tape,
ooh,
which are good. We'll put that on the website. I think one of the books I think was No Matter Where You Go, There You Are, something like that. But we'll put that up on the website, and his mindfulness meditation books are really quite good. So we'll put that on the website for you, and we'll make sure we get that information. I'll make sure that Carl actually calls you up and gives you that information personally also.
I would appreciate it, because if it's an audiobook, I'll listen to it.
We will do that. Brilliant. We'll give you that in audiobook. People can also take audiobooks out of their library, but you're a trucker, you have audiobooks. We'll give you the name of the book, and I'll make sure that we look that up when the show is over, and we'll send two of his books. I've read a number of his books, and we'll send that to you. Rob, great point.
Okay, well, good luck, and do your homework there. Listen to that audiobook, and report back if you find something that works for you.
Thank you, I will.
All right, good luck.
Thanks, have a good day.
You too.
Thanks for that call at 800-462-7413. Before we sign off today, Zorba, we always love it when our listeners chime in with helpful information. This came to us on our Facebook page from a listener named Anne, who offered up some background info for a caller who asked about a certain way of preparing steak called Pittsburgh Rare. This is a Pittsburgh Rare steak.
Pittsburgh Rare.
Dr. Zorba, Anne writes, Pittsburgh Rare is a term that started in the various steel mills in and around Pittsburgh. Makes sense. The mill workers needed high-calorie food for the heavy work and only had 30 minutes for lunch. So they would throw a steak on the 2,000-degree blast furnace, which was sterile, sure, due to the high heat.
That's right. That's
leave
right.
it for a few minutes and then turn it. Mm-hmm. The steak was seared.
Got it.
On the outside, but raw inside. It was a food of convenience, kind of like what the miners did with pasties. It's also called black and blue around Pittsburgh.
I love it. Pittsburgh Rare Steak.
So to make this at home.
Make this at home. You've got to heat up your cast iron skillet.
You've
got a blast furnace. I could never get my cast iron skillet to 2,000 degrees. I love it.
I don't know. The seared on the outside, raw on the inside.
Pittsburgh Rare.
Yeah, I don't know. I might pass on this one, but more power to them. Well done, Anne. Have a helpful tip for Zorba. Just post it to our Facebook page or send it in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download the podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or Facebook, Facebook, Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidrick. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Rob Ferret, sitting in for Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1029Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.